Welcome to La Liga Weekly. So we've been looking at the wrong crisis this season. The defending champions are fifth in the table. Atleti have lost more than they've won since mid-September. They've conceded more goals than anybody else in the top half of the table, more than Getafe, more than Osasuna. And they've used 378 different formations. Mario Hermoso is so confused, he gets out of bed and walks straight into the wardrobe every morning. Or was that him hiding from Adama Traore? We'll review Barca's victory in the game of the weekend. Aren't they lucky to have the cool head of Dani Alves back? One note for the VAR. If you're going to send someone off, look at the full speed first. Real Madrid are out of the Copa del Rey, but they're six clear at the top of La Liga. Carlo doesn't like any of their forwards other than Benzema and Vini. What is a false nine anyway? It was a bad weekend for the city of Seville. Rakitic fluffed a crucial spot kick for Sevilla. Betis were unied by Emery's Villarreal. And penalties were decisive in a huge game at the bottom as justice was finally served on goalkeepers.
To
kill opponents. They complained about it. We'll get to it. How many times have I said over the years that goalkeepers basically just get a free hit and absolutely totaling an opponent? It's John Driscoll and Terry Gibson here. Obviously, Terry, have you unscrambled your brain from the third place playoff of the Africa Cup of Nations?
It wasn't an easy gig, I have to be honest. There's we worked together, obviously, if anyone didn't know or didn't see it. We worked together on it, and we, as usual, did all our prep work and then found Cameroon made 9 changes. Understandable, they did play
a time game. I was doing all the prep, knowing it was going to be a totally different set of players. So I think I just haven't seen them, these guys play. They're going to come in, some new system, and
It was interesting. I mean, it was fun actually. I've got to be honest. I did 7 games in that competition and thoroughly enjoyed it. I'd like to have seen more goals. I was fortunate in the games I did that there was some goals. I didn't get to do Egypt along the way, which I'm pretty pleased about. Senegal were hard work in the group, but you could see that they had the potential. I think they had some issues with COVID early on as well, with important players missing. And as this tournament went on, you could see them, their defence being possibly the biggest reason why they would win it. And at the same time, they did still have the threat in Sadio Mane. So I thought Senegal were worthy winners of the competition. As I said, I'd like to see more goals, but it was good fun. I enjoyed it. It was a good experience.
Yes, it was. And Egypt scored 4 goals in 7 games and were penalty kicks away from winning the tournament. It's an extraordinary approach, isn't it? Old Carlos Quiroz.
Kind of glad. You're kind of glad they don't win it.
I'm sorry to any Egyptians. But no, I'm not sorry to Carlos Quiroz for, that any Real Madrid fans of a certain age will still be scrapped. Hang on, how did he ever, why was he Real Madrid manager? But he was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, what we're here for.
It was comforting to get back to La Liga, I must admit.
Yeah.
Easier.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you one thing. We criticised the VAR in La Liga and the Premier League. At least you know what's happened. At least there's some method of communication. Whereas that, the crucial third goal for Cameroon that took it to penalties. The goalkeeper was down injured. I don't know. I haven't looked up whether he was really injured or not. And then there's no indication, is there? Because they're playing replays, they're showing crowd shots. You don't know what... is it a goal or not?
It was about 5 or 6 minutes as well, wasn't it?
I think it was about 7 or 8 minutes, actually. I think that we were left in the dark, not knowing whether it was a goal. And they basically come, and then you realise that they've all gone back to the halfway line. Right, okay, it's a goal then. So, yeah. Anyway, down to the business of talking about La Liga, which is what everybody's here for. And a terrific game, Terry. It was... Sunday was set up nicely, wasn't it? You know, the games fell, that the big games were on Sunday. Valencia, Real Sociedad, not so much so, because it was 0-0, but a couple of talking points. But the obvious best game was Barca 4, Atleti 2. Now, one thing that isn't obvious, though, because Barca won it, and they had the high-profile chances, and terrific performance from Adama Traore, for example, that kind of thing. All of the stats, the XG stats, say that Atleti had better chances in this game. They should have won this game according to the stats. And I'm left thinking, hang on, is that just showed a flaw in the stats? I mean, the ones that La Liga TV put up Jordi Alba had a 12% chance of scoring. What did you get that from? And that's just nonsense. I don't know what they're using there. But XG is quite a sophisticated model, I think, isn't it? But Atleti were a shambles in this game, weren't they? Is that wrong? Are we just reading the score and then backfilling wrongly?
No, I don't think we are in this case. I think in this case, I thought there was the better team won. And I would have to say the more organised, cohesive team won, a team that had a plan. With Atleti, you're right. I think they've got the 12th best defensive record in La Liga, which is incredible. They conceded 24 last season. They've conceded 30 already. They just don't keep clean sheets. And I guarantee you now, I will be doing phone interviews and for TalkSport will ring me, for instance, when they play Manchester United. And the narrative will still be that Atletico under Simeone, this is going to be tough for Man United to score against Atletico Madrid. They're going to be ultra defensive. I don't know how they're going to play against United, but they're literally not ultra defensive. They can't keep a clean sheet.
The Porto game at the end of the group stage, if that's the game you've watched Atleti in, you will think it's the old Atleti. No other game have they played like that for months.
And I don't see, it must be really difficult at this moment in time to be playing for Atletico Madrid because they keep chopping in Simeone. Simeone keeps chopping and changing systems from one week to the next and four or five times during the game. Now, admittedly, they were chasing the game yesterday, so he had to make those changes. So that's understandable. But in general, he does it anyway.
It changed early, didn't it?
And you're never sure, were you going three or is it a four? Is it Hermoso left back? Yes, he was left back. But sometimes you look at it and think, you know, is he left wing back? And it's really, there isn't this. When they're at their best, they are well-drilled, well-coached. Every player knows his job. I love it when other players all the players in the team know everybody else's job as well. I think that's undervalued. I think that you need to know that, he knows he's playing there. I know he's going to be there. I know if I'm trouble, I know he's going to cover for me. All those things. But at the moment, it just looks an absolute shambles, to be honest, which is it's strange because a lot of people have asked for Simeone to be more expansive and the Atletico Madrid have indulged him with buying loads of attacking players. But fundamentally, the success for Atletico Madrid is always going to be with the strong defence and a goalkeeper who's one of the best in the world who, at the moment, I heard a stat last night and La Liga TV, he's actually conceded more goals than shots saved this year.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, he did yesterday, didn't he? I think there were only...
Yeah.
I can't think of saves that he made.
No. Kind of sums Atletico up. They're conceding good chances. I mean, yesterday, Jordi Alba's goal is an excellent goal, but you can pick it apart defensively. Dani Alves' goal, you can pick apart defensively, though it's fullback. Pico allowed a free header. He hits the bar for his goal. So there was a number of mistakes yesterday. And Gavi, Gavi, when would Gavi have scored against an Atletico Madrid back four with a far post header? That wouldn't have happened, but it is now. So I think that sums up where we are with Atletico. And players are coming in and out of the team. And very few seem to have the faith of Simeone. It is a real mess. And when you look at the league table, you're right. Crisis, we might have been looking in the wrong place. Barcelona is always going to be headline news because of Messi and because of his departure, because of the financial situation.
They are in financial crisis,
and it's headline news for Barcelona. Of course it is. So, but Atletico sort of quietly slipped under the radar that how bad they've been this season. And they're in a, I'm not so sure they're going to, Barcelona, I think top four, I think they finished third. Possibly might even catch Sevilla. That was the extent of the performance yesterday and the upgrade in attacking players. I think it's going to do them the world of good. The win against Atletico would give them confidence. Barcelona seems to be a happier place about now, for the players and even Dembele on the bench. And looks like he's going to be involved again. So there's been a massive upgrade in quality.
They've certainly got some players on the bench, haven't they? Aubameyang came off the bench, didn't he? Dembele, Depay to come back as well. So suddenly, that's three top quality attackers that they could use if they, you know, if they want to, as well as the ones who play. Can you just tell me about, I want to ask about Alves later, but tell me what you thought of Adama Traore. I've watched a lot of him in the Premier League, because obviously he was at Middlesbrough in the Championship, actually. And I mentioned in previously how his role under Tony Pulis was basically getting Borough up the pitch, and he ran huge distances as defenders were trying to clog him the whole time. At Wolves, it was immensely frustrating watching him play, because he never assisted, because they never had anyone up front with him. So, it worked well briefly when Raul Jimenez was playing really well. Other than that, he was delivering the ball into the box a lot. People criticise his the consistency of his delivery. I think it's all right. I think his delivery is good. Yeah. I don't think it's as good as his running with the ball. But Barca showed the Gavi goal. You actually throw some people in the box when he's taking on the fullback, and you might have a chance.
Exactly. And I think the tactics we saw from Barcelona were really good. Albert Ferreira really analysed it well on La Liga TV last night. And there were some great clips of it. Adama Traore stayed really wide. So Dani Alves,
I can show you him actually, as you talk,
was able to make his runs in field instead of overlapping. So Dani Alves, the perfect example is where Dani Alves scores his goal from. That's not a position you would normally see a right back. But that's because Adama Traore is being utilised as a wide player that stays really wide. So that stretches the defence. I mean, he couldn't get any wider.
Yeah.
I mean, that stretches that defence. And then on the opposite side, we had Gavi, who is a midfielder, but he was playing in the front three. But he played in field, which then left the space for Jordi Alba. So it was a really good variation of attacking wide play from Barcelona that really caused problems for Atletico. So Dani Alves was underlapping. Jordi Alba was overlapping. Gavi was in field. So hence the reason when Traore clips the ball across, it's Gavi. And that was a great cross by Adama Traore. He drops his shoulder. We talk about pace, but it's how dynamic he is, even over a short distance, isn't it? We can see him knocking the ball out of his feet and knocking it 20 yards past an opponent and leaving him leaving him for dead. But that was over 3 or 4 yards. That just instantly off the shoulder, change your pace. Yeah. But even over that short distance, how dynamic he is. And then I'm thinking, just clip it. I was watching that. That was the perfect moment of analysing the Adama Traore and thinking, right, we'll be getting your locker now. You've done the hard bit. Can you finish it off with a good cross? And he did exactly that. So he was great. His role in the team was clear to see right from the start. He's only been there a few days. And the role suits him. Stay wide. He's got to muck in terms of defensive work, but in general, he's going to be the outlet on that right side of the pitcher. And teams, we talked in the recent podcast about teams playing against Barcelona and not being too worried about their attack. They're going to be now with Adama Traore, that's for sure. And then Aubameyang playing in the middle, that's for sure. Ferran Torres, Gavi, as you said, Dembele might be back. It suddenly looks a whole lot brighter for Barcelona in terms of attacking players.
Aubameyang came on, but he didn't get to do a lot of attacking because Dani Alves got sent off, didn't he, soon after that? And the game very much changed after that, didn't it? So what about the red card? The reference I made at the top, as a matter of principle, I'm not saying he shouldn't have been sent off because it's probably, you tell me, but as a matter of principle, when the ref goes over, they should show him the whole incident in real time, rather than isolating the worst bit of it. Because anything looks bad. If you can isolate
sometimes
anything,
it's a steal. Yeah. Sometimes it's a steal clip.
And anything.
That's going to be a red card.
Whereas, because the commentators didn't mention it. They didn't mention it at all in real time. I think one Atleti player complained or something. And obviously Carrasco complained because he'd just been whacked on the calf. But so was it a red? Was it as bad as it looked?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think it was malicious because of the instant reaction from Dani Alves. I don't understand what he was doing. It's almost like he got his run pattern wrong and come down on the back of the car, because as soon as he did it, you watch it, as soon as he does it, his hand goes up and he's almost apologising that he's caught Carrasco.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's meant to do it. But when you see it in the replay, I think everybody knew that it was going to be a red card. I think the arguments from Barcelona were to do with an offside that hadn't been given. I think they one or two claims that the assistant referee put his flag up.
Yeah.
I thought the whistle had gone.
Yeah.
So I thought there might have been a loophole there that the whistle had actually gone, and then
if you're sent off for violent conduct, it doesn't matter, does it? You can't deny a goal, whistle, and go over and chin someone. So it's not the same as a denying a goal scoring opportunity. Because if that's offside, then you do get away with your dog. So, but not if you kick someone.
I think that was the only argument Barcelona could have had. I'm not saying it was the right argument, but I think when you saw the challenge from Dani Alves, there was no need for him to do it. What I would say about Dani Alves, though, he's a more aggressive version than ever. Now, and I know why that is. It's older players, particularly old defenders, they do that. Because they lose some of their other attributes, they make up with it with getting tighter to opponents and being more aggressive. So we've seen slightly different Dani Alves, and I understand why he's doing it. He's not as quick as he once was, and he's making sure that he gets in tight, he's aggressive, makes life difficult. So I'm not suggesting we're going to see Dani Alves sent off again for Barcelona, but I think we're going to see him pick up lots of yellow cards. That's just the way it goes. He doesn't want to be chasing back. So if he's got a chance to get tight, he'll do that. If he's got a chance to snap away a challenge, that's what he's going to do. So that's a slightly different version of Dani Alves we're going to see at Barcelona.
Yeah. Right, let's crack on with Real Madrid, shall we? So they were knocked out of the Copa del Rey last week.
Can I just say about Barcelona's performance?
Yes.
The one player yesterday, I'm just sitting here, I'm watching the game, and I'm just laughing at this. Pedro's 18, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is absolutely ridiculous how he's controls a game, never gives the ball away, in difficult circumstances sometimes as well. And you're thinking, well, he's under pressure, is he? And he finds a pass. He finds the right pass. I've never seen an 18-year-old play with who looks like he's in command of the whole game as a teenager. It's absolutely, he didn't get a lot mentioned because Traore was an explosive debut because other stuff happened because of the four goals and three of them coming from defenders and spectacular football. But just watching Pedri yesterday, it was utterly ridiculous. Never seen anything like it. You know, I played with a player from Norman Whiteside at Manchester United. He was 20, 21 at the time and he was like a 33-year-old in terms of his intelligence, and it's really extraordinary to see a young player, a teenager, in big games as well. This is for club and country, just never ever making a mistake, picking the right pass every time, making every single decision he makes is the right decision. And technically, he's superb. I thought it was an astonishing display, which is really sort of no one's really talked about because all the other stuff that happened. It was love watching Pedri play, I must admit that.
Good point.
As you can gather now.
Yes, and he nearly scored the Messi goal as well, didn't he? Giving it to Jordi Alba and making that little dash into the box. He couldn't quite finish it like Messi one day. Right, Real Madrid beat Granada. So they got knocked out of the Copa del Rey. Tell us briefly, Terry, about Ancelotti got a lot of stick for the decisions he made. Oh. Obviously, no Benzema and no Vinny for this game as well. So he went with Isco as a false nine, Hazard and Jovic on the bench. Asensio got the goal. So my point is, he doesn't seem to like anyone, does he?
No. I'm finding it really strange, actually, at the moment, because it's almost like if he can't have Benzema or Vinicius, he doesn't want anybody else, and that will be to the detriment. And it's like there's so many midfield players as well. He's reluctant to rest any of them. And it does take its toll in the end on players that clearly know now that Ancelotti doesn't trust them. I think Isco in the game, and he brought a whole lot of trouble on himself. I sent you a text, didn't I, saying after the game against Athletic Club, it's ridiculous, the decision-making from Ancelotti. Now, don't criticise him normally because there's no reason to, but I can in this one. He wanted to wait to put Hazard and Jovic on in extra time. And they conceded a last-minute winner from Berenguer to knock them out. What difference would it have made if they'd played 40 minutes instead of 30? You know, to take that risk of going to the end of the 90 minutes, banking on Athletic not scoring, then putting three players on that might change the game was an absolute nonsense. I mean, Hazard's got 40 minutes in him. Bale's got 40 minutes in him, probably, in extra time against a team that's tiring, that's given their all. So that was strange. And then I expected him to revert back. And he keeps saying that Hazard and Bale and Jovic, you know, how much he likes them. And then when you get the team, the lineup last night, they're not in it again, none of them. And he's playing Isco as a false nine. And I thought Isco was terrific last night. But yeah, he didn't fulfil the role he was asked to play.
Right.
He's not going I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, Isco's backing into a big central defender trying to control the ball on his chest.
Yeah.
It was the only time we saw him do that. And he must have thought, I can't do that. I'll drop off and find a bit of space. But no one's centre forward.
Yeah, but this is where he played, though, weirdly. Are we sharing this? That's Isco there. It's quite high up the pitch, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm going to take everyone off except Isco. This is for Patreons only. That doesn't tell you much, but he's a bit too high up. Hang on. So who came on for him? Jovic. Jovic played deeper. Actually, I don't know what a false... That's what I mean. I don't know what a false nine is, really. I mean, I know what... Isn't Benzema's a false nine then, isn't he? You know what I mean? He's not there...
Yeah, he's a crossover, isn't he, Benzema, between a 9 and a 10, but he is the focal point of the attack. Yeah. He will hold the ball up. They can use him as an outlet, but in his movement off the ball then is down the left, down the right, drops deep. Benzema is fantastic, dropping deep, getting involved in the play, knocking the ball off. It goes out wide. He gets on his bike and no one picks him up. They fail to pick him up. But it's hard to pick him up.
Haven't you just described a false 9?
Yeah.
What is a false 9 other than that?
I think with Benzema, the difference is, though, he is the focal point still of the attack.
You're right.
So they shove it into him the whole time, whether he drops deep and gets into feet or whether he pulls and plays against the two centre-backs, that's being the still fulfilling that number nine role. Isco, a couple of times he tried it. He went up against the centre-halves, they won headers. He tried to chest it down, they knocked him off the ball. So he just gave up with that and then just tried to find little bits of space, which is what he's good at and really good at. I still think he's an underrated player, but he's not a centre forward. And you lose that goal scoring threat because you're not going to expect Isco to replicate what Benzema does, to replicate what, especially with Vinicius missing as well. So I thought it was really strange. It's a complete lack of faith by Ancelotti and the other players, Hazard not getting a game now when Vinicius isn't playing. So that tells you, you know, when Vinicius fit, Hazard's not going to get in. I just thought he brought a load of trouble onto Ancelotti, which he didn't need, because the season is going along really nicely. But he's dealing with everything. You know, maybe I was concerned maybe that the same players are playing too much in every game, because there is quality on the bench, and he's been reluctant to use any. He is clearly reluctant to change from, we know, 10 of the 11 and maybe Asensio now. So I think we can all name the starting 11 for Real Madrid. Yesterday it was a struggle. No Benzema, no Vinicius, no Casemiro, no Felipe, but you look at the talent that was still there. It's just, you know, Ancelotti has got to make the most of the talent available at his disposal, because the game's come thick and fast. It's cost them being knocked out of the Copa del Rey. And, you know, it's always going to be a tough game against Athletic Club. But it's a tournament they want to do well in. And he has sufficient players in it to rotate. The quality is there, but he clearly
doesn't want to.
No trust. No, doesn't want to. Because he doesn't trust them, which then does hamper your chances of getting a tune out of players that he knows, like Dani Ceballos. Valverde's been isolated, really. Camavinga is a terrific young player. Fantastic young player. It's Jovic. It's going to be difficult to get a tune out of them going forward. I don't get the point of Gareth Bale. He's on the bench every game and never warms up, and not even looking like it. Ancelotti's going to put him on, yet says really good things about him. Him and it's those three he says really good things about in the press, and defends his situation about not using him. And you kind of read it, you think, I'll kind of believe him. And then the next game, they're not playing again. And now I'm at the point where, no, he's not interested in using Hazard, Bale.
Bale was pictured laughing, wasn't he, at Hazard warming up for most of the second half and then never getting on. And you sort of see it, can't you? It just seems to have no faith, like you say. So Asensio's goal, lovely strike, although I would point out that Maxime Gonalon's could have been a little bit braver. Did you notice him ducking out of the way of it? You need a bit better than that, don't you, from Granada's point of view?
The camera did as well, didn't it? It focused on him.
Yeah.
It did have a look about it. I must be honest, that a team that was tiring, that were working really hard to stay in the game with Real Madrid, losing concentration and just losing that energy you need in the later stages of the game. So they kind of had that feel to it. And after Real Madrid scored, the defender from Granada really got messy and untidy. And they were lucky to go away with just the one goal defeat in the end. But it took that Real Madrid a fair old amount of time to break them down. 74 minutes in, and at that stage, I've got to be honest, apart from long distance efforts, mainly from Asensio, they didn't really cause the Granada defence too many problems. But Ancelotti made the point afterwards about it was an important stage of the season that when Asensio scored, because that's because they've had a recent run of results in La Liga that haven't been great. They did open the door for Sevilla, been knocked out of the Copa del Rey. If they'd have drawn against Granada, having dropped points against Cadiz and Granada, Getafe and Elche, going out the Copa del Rey, if they'd dropped points against Granada again, that would have been more criticism, particularly with the lineup that he chose. So the fact that Asensio got the win, it just takes the pressure off slightly going into. I mean, they've got a 6-point lead at the top of the league, and then they've got PSG in the Champions League. So, yeah.
But they've got Villarreal away.
Good games coming up.
Villarreal away this coming weekend. Obviously, no one wants to be knocked out of the Copa del Rey, but a blank week midweek might not have been a terrible thing for them in terms of getting everyone fit to play Villarreal away and then PSG away in the space of a few days. Right, shall we crack on? Betis 0, Villarreal 2. Betis, we've all been full of praise for Betis, free-scoring Betis, but Villarreal... It's good away performance would be a way of putting it, Terry, wouldn't it? In that they frustrated, restricted, and then Betis got really careless on the corner. Because I looked, everyone was back for that corner for Betis.
Yeah.
And somehow both Villarreal centre-backs were unmarked on the edge of the six-yard box. And Pau Torres scored, and then Capoue scored a brilliant goal at the end, lovely strike to wrap it up.
Yeah, and Villarreal in outstanding form at the moment. Finally, they're where they should be. The Champions League, obviously, had an impact on the team and the group and the squad and the manager. And since they qualified for the knockout stages, since they've been able to focus on La Liga, they've been excellent. And that's where they should be. I mean, they should be challenging. That's the point I was making about Atletico under pressure, because Betis are above them, because Villarreal are breathing down their necks. You've seen an improvement from Barcelona. It's, they're not many miles above Real Sociedad. Atletico, point ahead. So that's where it's a really good race for the top four. And it's not just exclusively the fourth place up for grabs. I think there's a couple of places up for grabs, to be honest, because it was interesting, actually, that the Copa del Rey, which we haven't spoke about an awful lot, Rayo against Betis on Wednesday, Athletic against Valencia, Athletic played tonight against Espanyol. Rayo lost, Betis lost, and Valencia drew at home to Real Sociedad. And the games are this week. So they had the Copa del Rey last week. They've got the Copa del Rey this week. But any of those four teams in it now, they must genuinely believe they can win it. So I think the focus from this weekend's La Liga fixtures for those clubs, and I'm using Betis as the example here because they weren't their usual self. So I think there was kind of element that we're in the last four, which is great, but also we're in the last four without Barcelona, without Real Madrid, without Atletico Madrid, without Sevilla. So I think that's why the four teams that are involved, we haven't seen Athletic tonight against Espanyol, but on Monday evening. But Rayo lost, Betis lost, and Valencia drew. So I think there was kind of element, it was a good weekend to play one of those teams that's still involved in the Copa del Rey. So Betis weren't anywhere near their best. And when I say near the best, that they've been at their best in the last few weeks in every single game. So then when they come off there, usual level of performance, which we've seen recently, Villarreal will punish them. Great goal from Capoue, really fantastic strike. And you said Pau Torres with a more than decent header, and Villarreal controlled that game. So excellent performance from Unai Emery's Villarreal.
Yes. Right, let's go. Oh, I haven't done a Sevilla yet. We must talk about Sevilla because they messed up, really, didn't they? Well, Rakitic failed to score a penalty in added time at the end of the game, which would have given them a really good win against Osasuna away, and it would have put the pressure onto Real Madrid. So it's a disappointing one from their point of view, wasn't it, to just come away with the draw. I've been looking at positions for this as well, Terry. Obviously, Martial came and played, didn't he? So that was interesting. Right, hang on.
They had some issues as well, injury wise, didn't they, Sevilla?
Yeah,
I do feel for them a bit. They're going in, they've had a really tough period of games.
I've got a
missing players in the African Cup of Nations, and then injured players in the warm up, injured players early in the game. So that was a blow for them.
There's a good quiz in this. This
one is the answers there.
This one is too hard. This one is unfairly hard, I think. Hang on. Right. Who's that player there? So the tell us what you can see on the that's the heat map. So the Patreons can see this. If you want to join the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL. Right. What position is this? who is it? What position is he playing?
It's a hybrid version of like a really deep midfielder, left winger, left back, left wing back, inside left, outside right.
You know who it is? It's En-Nesyri.
What?
He's the centre forward. It's extraordinary, isn't it? And so that's his heat map. I'll change it to touches. There are his touches. So he looks like a right back, doesn't he? Looks like we're on a right back, and it's four touches in the box, two of which might
be Danny Alves.
Yeah, it's similar to Danny Alves's. Yeah. I think there's a problem, isn't it? I think I'll show you Martial's, who's like an outside left and all that. That's everything down the left side. He obviously popped over to the right briefly. Just no one's getting any touches in the box for Sevilla. That's my issue with them. It's very it's too controlled, isn't it?
Yes, I agree. They've gone down the Atletico Madrid route, the 4-3-3, and it's very structured. The only thing I would say is that, as I said, they've had a tough time recently with lots of injuries, players missing the African Cup of Nations. Ocampos got injured in the warm-up literally 10 minutes before kickoff. So and then Montiel got injured, I think it was 4 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
So two changes forced them, Lopetegui, and you know, Rakitic wasn't meant to be playing. He came in for Ocampos at the last minute. They Osasuna away, although Osasuna have won many games at home, it's a tough place to play because Osasuna are a decent team. And they compete. They like competing against the better teams in the league as well. Great fan base. It's a tough place to go and play. But when they do get the opportunity to erect it, you're thinking, well, he's the ideal player to take it. Taking big pressure penalties in the World Cup. And Croatia went all the way to the final. He was the man. Is he stepping up to take it? You're looking at him thinking, something not right about this run-up. This looks different from Rakitic, and it was saved. Sergio Herrera pulled off a great save, and it was a big blow for Sevilla not to get the points in that fashion. Not entirely convinced it was a penalty, if I'm being honest. There was a slight touch from Manu Garcia. I think it was with the slight touch. Koundé threw himself up in the air. But when you saw it on the video, assistant referee, slow it down. Stop it at a critical moment and get a steal of it. There's contact. So it was tough. It's been tough for Sevilla. 6 points. I still think they're in it. They've got Real Madrid at home and they've got to get through this mini slump. I think it's their third straight draw. So that's dropping points left, right, and centre. You are going to get periods like this in the league during a whole season. Real Madrid will have it. They've had it. They will have another one. So Sevilla are just trying to claw, you know, hang, cling on to any hope that they've got at the moment. They need to start picking wins up again. I'm sure they will. The players are coming back from the international duty. One or two are coming back from injury. So they've got a good squad. I still think they're in it. Outsiders now because of the 6 points gap. But as I say, you know, they can cling on to the fact they've got Real Madrid at home. They'll think, well, if we take 3 points there, then we're back in it. And then they've got hope that, you know, Real Madrid do drop more points. So it's not over yet.
What did you make of Martial?
Quiet, to be honest. And, you know, not as didn't have an impact like Traore, of course. Quiet. I'm going to be interested to see actually where he plays in this system. Mm-hmm. So I think if you play him wide, I don't think there was any point in bringing him in. Mm. And they are really pleased with the fact they've been able to get a relatively big name from Manchester United to join them. Because they feel at last other players in Europe are looking at them and treating them as a genuine big European club. So that's the coup for Sevilla. Now, I would like to see him play in a more central position, I have to be honest. I think they've got enough wide players. If you're going to go all out, get a player in to have a big impact, then you don't want him playing up and down the left wing and playing in a straight line. You need him playing in a more influential position. So that's my hope that Martial does get to play in a centre forward role. To be honest, that's the position I think he should occupy at Sevilla.
Yeah, agreed. But we shall watch him with interest. Right. So Valencia 0, Real Sociedad 0. Tell us about that, Terry, and also about the debuts for Valencia's new loan players, Gil and Moriba.
Moriba was quiet, I thought. Not too bad. It was okay. Nothing drastically wrong.
Yeah.
Brian Hill was, again, fantastic. You know, you can see why the Valencia fans have lumped in on him straight away and they want to keep him. And comparing to Pablo Aymar, he looks a classic Valencia player, isn't he? One that they will enjoy and they've enjoyed in the past, that type of player. So he was terrific. Should have scored when he was through. Bit of a feeble attempt at the finish, but after a good run. I thought Yunus Musa was fantastic as well. So I'm looking at Valencia and I'm looking at them thinking, actually, they've got some really, really, you know, good young players that Bordalás has given opportunities to. And bringing in Elex Moriba, bringing in Brian Hill, playing Yunus, I think it was good to watch. Slightly disappointing it weren't gold. When you look deeper at Real Sociedad, it's not an isolated game where they've failed to score. This happens too often for them. And that's a dilemma that Aguasil, the manager, has got to come to find a solution with, because Oyarzabal's top with 7, a number of those are penalties. Isak has got 4. You know, they just don't score enough goals. I mean, it's quite baffling, actually, because when you look at the attacking players and their style of play, they're not a team that you can look at and find an obvious reason why they're not creating chance after chance after chance or not taking their chances. So that's an issue. My big talking point in this game, the goalkeepers both played well, hence the reason it's 0-0. Mamardashvili for Valencia and Ramiro for Real Sociedad. Both teams could have been more clinical with their finishing. My big issue in this game was the head collision in the 93rd minute between Hugo Guillamon and Mikel Merino. Why they both came on the pitch? I don't know if you've seen the pictures today of Guillamon's nose.
Okay.
And you can see it's flat straight away.
They
spent a long time down injured. Both players went off the side of the pitch. We're in this era, rightly so, of head injuries. Moreno has got a massive gash on his forehead where he's clashed directly head-to-head with Guillamon. Guillamon's clearly broke his nose. There's a lot of blood spill. And they both went back on because they'd both used all their subs. They were on the pitch for 90 seconds. They apparently jogged around for a bit. They both came back on at the same time. I'm thinking, why didn't both physios just say, we can't put them back? We just go 10 to 10.
We've
got 90 seconds left. He's got a massive cut on his forehead and he's clearly going to be concussed. Guillamon's clearly broke his nose. He's gone back on with a wad of bandages all over his face. Those days, I thought, had gone. And they should be gone. Running back on when you have no idea what day of the week it is, where you are, or anything is ridiculous. So I just couldn't understand with both players being in the same position and both club teams being just played 10v10 for 90 seconds.
Or
terrible collision.
We should have accidental. A proper head injury protocol. I must admit, to confess my ignorance, I don't know what the situation is in La Liga, but you should be able to put a head injury replacement on, shouldn't you? You should.
Or in this case, common sense, two managers to be getting on well. There's nothing going on between them.
Yeah.
If they're both given a nod and said, oh, look, keep them off, get them back. Let's get one to hospital straight up. Well, both could have gone to hospital, but one definitely has for surgery on his nose. The other one's probably been stitched up in by the club doctor at the stadium. But it was a sickening blow. It was accidental. Both players fully committed, clash of heads, bouncing ball. One of the worst nightmares for a footballer when you think I'm going to go in here and I might get my nose broke. And they both went for it. Dying moments of the game. So that was my big talking point. Let's wise up in terms of head injuries. Obvious head injuries. I've done it. I've gone back on a football pitch. You want to be brave. You want to be strong. You want to be the player that. Oh no, I'll carry on. And you have no idea where you are. And you don't for a few days, to be honest. But you know you're going to be fit for the next game. Those silly things that we used to do, there shouldn't no place for in, now in football.
Well said. Right, let's go down the bottom, shall we? Mallorca beat Cadiz, and it was an important game, wasn't it? Because obviously either side of the drop zone, and Cadiz had shown signs of picking up. They went in front, Alcaraz with another lovely goal. And then the penalties are crucial. So obviously Cadiz are unhappy about that. On the first one, I've got sympathy because there's not an awful lot in that.
I agree with that.
The second one, though, the goalkeeper comes out. And absolutely, it's like being hit by a ball charging at you, isn't it? And goalkeepers get away with it, but this time they didn't. He didn't get away with it, and it's a penalty, and it was decisive.
And they come out with their knees up.
I had two broken ribs
from a knee in the back from a goalkeeper. Had no reason to come out above me with his knees up and smash me in the back.
And he did
it. That's what he did. His knee was really up. I think it was Angel.
Yeah, and the knee hits him first before he punches up. Because I checked that. I was thinking, does he punch the board and then there's a collision? No, he comes out, his knees are up, he hits. Is it Angel? And then he punches
on the head.
Ball. Yeah, yeah.
On the head.
Yeah, yeah.
A knee hits him on the head. Mm. How is that allowed? I was really glad that was given. I cheered loudly when that was given, I must be honest. It was like, yes, all those years. Yeah. And the Cadiz players are looking around thinking, no, he's allowed to do it. Their complaint was, oh, he's allowed to do that, isn't he?
Yeah,
no,
he's the goalie.
You're not. really interesting thing about this one is we talk about teams at the bottom that are trying to have a go. Both of these teams have had a go in the transfer window. I mean, Cadiz have brought in three or four players, a couple from Valladolid. Ruben Alcaraz got the opening goal in this game, a brilliant goal, great strike, left-footed, top corner from distance. They're putting Sergio Rico, they're putting Lucas Perez, Félix Emeterio. So at least they're having a go. Mallorca likewise. But the interesting player in this one was a player called, I'll confess, I didn't know anything about, Verdat Muriqi, who scored the second penalty. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you see these other bits of action in the game, you think, well, where's, I don't know about this guy. Attributes look like Erling Haaland, to be honest. When he was on the rampage up front with the pace and his aerial ability, then you realise they've paid £1 million loan fee, €1 million loan fee to get him from Lazio.
Yeah.
So another example of Mallorca. He might just be the player. When you look at the league table now, I know he only scored a penalty in this game, but he's the player they've been lacking.
And
the quality is going to be enough, I think, to if they can keep him fit, and he shows the form he showed in this game, that will be a massive. So €1 million well spent.
He was unlucky. He's a Lazio player, isn't he? And he didn't play a lot of games for Lazio. I remember commentating on him for Sky because he's Kosovo international. And he's the big hero of Kosovan football. And he'd scored, he had a good goal scoring record until he went to Italy. And he's a big old, he's a big unit, as they say, isn't he? He's a big old beast of a man. So, yeah, it could be interesting, couldn't it?
Yeah, no, sir. But that's an example of two teams in relegation problems.
Yeah.
Mallorca are five clear now. Cadiz are very much in trouble. At least they've had a go. Levante,
tell us about Levante.
Completely given up.
I checked that old Lischke was still there. He was when we started recording because I was thinking, come on, sack him and get another one in. You know, it's been weeks.
The club have just given up, haven't they? Mm. They're putting a manager probably shouldn't be there. Lack of experience to start with. A little upturning form. They got the win against Mallorca, but then it's all deteriorated. it's all their only win. But that win, with the players they've got, you're looking and thinking, well, if they can sort them out defensively and cut out those stupid mistakes that happen on a regular basis, you know, Morales, Soldado, Gonzalo Melero, you know, Ennis Bardi, loads of, I could continue, Roger Marti, Jorge Fruto. There's loads of good players there. But since that win, I mean, the next game was a defeat. Can't remember who it was against, and now they've just given up. No action in the transfer window. A manager that shouldn't be there, they can't be bothered to sack now, probably. And they're looking like they're gearing up and setting themselves up for next season. 12 points from safety now. Hatafa, incredible. Yeah. Just goes to show what you could do. You know, with Kike Sanchez Flores, their first eight games, they've 1 point. They're now up to 25 points. He has got 24 points in 15 games. Since he took over. And the first two or three results weren't great until he sorted out the new system of play. They've brought in good players in the transfer window and they've got a striker in Enes Unal, who's still relatively young, who's showing his true potential. He's always been, I've always thought there was a really good centre forward in there. And now playing on a regular basis, he's flourishing. So
9-12
straightforward win. Ninth goal of the season for a team that struggled for the first eight games. His goals to games ratio is really good. And Getafe are really good. There's a smashing win by them. There's seven clear relegation. How quick that's turned round.
Yeah.
But they're 1 point and one goal in the first eight games.
Yeah. It's a brilliant job, isn't it?
And in this new system of play and new style of Getafe, to get away from all that rubbish that they saw under Bordalás, so finishing in a European spot that demolished Ajax, and they wanted to get rid of all that, and they did, where it got them. So they've gone back now, and Kike Sanchez Flores he's put his own stamp on it. He's a classic all Getafe team, full of determination, good players, and playing good, solid, sensible football. A system of play they all know, and they've been superb in the last 3 months now.
And you flagged up that Elche were playing well as well, Terry. So another a big win for them, wasn't it? 3-1 against Alaves, which is hugely important. Yeah,
tricky going behind. I don't think their confidence is at a level yet where they were relaxed after going a goal down very early from Hosselu. A slight chink in the Elche performance. It was dreadful defending. Three defenders left it, and Hosselu is able to tap it in at the far post. No one picks him up. It's quite an obvious thing to do when you play Alaves. Mark Hosselu, he's the only one that ever scores. And they failed to do that, but they recovered for a while, and then Perry Mia and get to a couple of goals. Fidel with a smashing finish as well. So Perry Mia is interesting. He's a player that plays off and around the front. That's seven goals for the season. They're 5 unbeaten, 26 points, 8 clear now. So that's turned around from, you know, Francisco's come in, took away that cautious play that we saw from Elche with Escriba, and they're on the march now. They're not far away from ensuring that they're back in La Liga next season, which is good. I think that it's a good watch on television, nice stadium, decent support, and they're clearly in really good form now.
And finally, Rayo Vallecano, you mentioned earlier, Terry, lost, obviously, big cup game coming up, first leg of the cup coming up this week. Two goals for Bryce Mendes for Celta Vigo.
Yeah, no, I think that we're going to see a downturn in form from Rayo because it was impossible for them to maintain that form that we saw throughout the season. They're not the best team at home now in La Liga. I think Real Madrid are. They've gone above them in terms of points gained. Funny enough, Real Madrid have got the highest goals, best home record, best away record. Tells you why they're top of the league. But Raya had that record of being the most points in La Liga at home. So that's gone. This was a 2-0 away to defeat to Celta. It's not the end of the world. It's in between two cup games. They're in a healthy position in the league. They will want to get their confidence back and belief back. But Bryce Mendes, who I think is a terrific player, Bryce Mendes. Playing really good football at the moment, scored two goals. First one was decent, second one was fantastic. The classic near post, back heel, half volley flick from a ball driven in low and hard at the near post. Good player. Celta, a decent team. Not a disaster for Rayo to lose 2-0 there. They'll be going into the game against Betis, hoping over two legs they can make a Copa del Rey final, which would be a hell of a season for a newly promoted team via the playoffs we thought were going to be cannon fodder. So I don't want to give too much criticism to Rayo. They'll be going for it in the cup against Betis.
Yeah, right. So enjoy that, everyone, if you can watch it. And then obviously La Liga is back next weekend. I think all the weirdness is out until the next international break now, isn't it? Hopefully, all the weirdness is gone. That's not La Liga, is it? It wouldn't be the same if weird things didn't happen from time to time.
It's every league, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's every
league. It is.
South American World Cup qualifiers, African Cup, COVID. It's players travelling back quicker than others. It is something we're getting used to.
Well, hopefully we'll not getting too used to it. Hopefully, we'll go. Although next season we've got the World Cup in the middle of the season, haven't we?
December.
So the normal times do not return for some considerable time, but we will return with another podcast. We've got a normal weekend, so we'll return with another podcast next weekend, and we'll see you for that. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.